They know the scripture is the law of God by which they must be acquitted or condemned in the judgment, and that the man is blessed who delights in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth meditate day and night. Yet will they not be at the pains to read a chapter once a day, if they carry a Bible to church and neglect it all the week. This is the most use they make of it, though they are commanded to pray without ceasing and to pray always. Yet they will neither pray constantly in their families nor in secret. Though Daniel would rather be cast to the lions than forbear praying three times a day in his house, where his enemies might hear him, yet these men will rather venture to be an eternal prey to Satan, the roaring lion, than thus seek their own safety. Or their cold and heartless prayers invite God to a denial, for among men it is taken for granted that he who asks but slightly and seldom cares not much for what he asks. They judge themselves unworthy of heaven, who think it not worth their more constant and earnest requests. If every door was marked where families do not, morning and evening, earnestly seek the Lord in prayer, and his wrath were poured out upon such prayerless families, our towns would be as places overthrown by the plague, the people being dead within, and the mark of judgment without. I fear where one house would escape, 10 would be marked out for death. And the very doors, as it were, cry, Lord, have mercy upon us, because the people would not pray themselves. But especially if we could see what men do in their secret chambers, how few would you find in the whole town that spend one quarter of an hour, morning and night, in earnest supplication to God for their souls. Oh, how little do these men value eternal rest. Thus do they slothfully neglect all endeavors for their own welfare, except some public duty in the congregation to which custom or credit engages them. Persuade them to read good books, learn the grounds of religion in their catechism, and sanctify the Lord's day in prayer and meditation, and hearing the word, forbearing all worldly thoughts and speeches. And what a tedious life do they take this to be, as if they thought heaven were not worth doing so much for. Another class are formal professors, who will be brought to any outward duty, but to the inward work of religion they will never be persuaded. They will preach, or hear, or read, or talk of heaven, or pray in their families, and take part with the persons or causes that are good, and desire to be esteemed among the godly, but you can never bring them to the more spiritual duties, as to be constant and fervent in secret prayer and meditation, conscientious in self-examination, heavenly-minded, to watch over their hearts, words, and ways, to mortify the flesh, and not make provision to fulfill its lusts, to love and heartily forgive an enemy, and prefer their brethren before themselves, to lay all they have or do at the feet of Christ, and prize his service and favor before all, to prepare to die and willingly leave all to go to Christ. Hypocrites will never be persuaded to any of these. If any hypocrite entertains the gospel with joy, it is only in the surface of his soul. He never gives the seed any depth of earth. It changes his opinions, but never melts and new molds his heart, nor sets up Christ there in full power and authority. As his religion lies most in opinion, so does his chief business and conversation. He is usually an ignorant, bold, conceited dealer in controversies, rather than an humble embracer of known truth with love and obedience. By his slighting the judgments and persons of others, and seldom talking with seriousness and humility of the great things of God, he shows his religion dwells in his brain and not in his heart. The wind of temptation carries him away as a feather, because his heart is not established with Christ and grace. He never, in private conversation, humbly bewails his soul's imperfections or tenderly acknowledges his unkindness to Christ, but gathers his greatest comfort from his being of such a persuasion or party. The like may be said of the worldly hypocrite who chokes the gospel with the thorns of worldly cares and desires. He is convinced that he must be religious or he cannot be saved, and therefore he reads and hears and prays and forsakes his former company and courses, but he resolves to keep his hold of present things. His judgment may say God is the chief good, but his heart and affections never said so. The world has more of his affections than God, and therefore it is his God. Though he does not run after opinions and novelties like the world, yet he will be of that opinion which will best serve his worldly advantage. And as one whose spirits are enfeebled by some pestilential disease, so this man's spirits, being possessed by the plague of a worldly disposition, how feeble is he in secret prayer, how superficial in examination and meditation, how poor in heart watchings, how nothing at all in loving and walking with God, rejoicing in him or desiring him. So that both these and many other sorts of hypocrites, though they will go with you in the easy outside of religion, yet will never be at the pains of inward and spiritual duties. And even the godly themselves are too lazy seekers of their everlasting rest. Alas, what a disproportion is there between our light and heat, our profession and prosecution. Who makes such haste as if it were for heaven? How still we stand, how idly we work, how we talk and jest and trifle away our time, how deceitfully we perform the work of God, how we hear as if we heard not, and pray as if we prayed not, and examine and meditate and reprove sin as if we did it not, and enjoy Christ as if we enjoyed him not, as if we had learned to use the things of heaven as the apostle teacheth us to use the things of the world. What a frozen stupidity has benumbed us. We are dying, and we know it, and yet we stir not. We are at the door of eternal happiness or misery, and yet we perceive it not. Death knocks, and we hear it not. God and Christ call and cry to us, "Today, if ye will hear my voice, harden not your hearts. Work while it is day, for the night cometh when none can work." Now ply your business, labor for your lives, lay out all your strength and time now or never, and yet we stir no more than if we were half asleep. What haste do death and judgment make? How fast do they come on? They are almost upon us, and yet what little haste we make. Lord, what a senseless, earthly, hellish thing is a hard head. Where is the man that is in earnest a Christian? Methinks men everywhere make but a trifle of their eternal state. They look after it but a little by the by. They do not make it the business of their lives. If I were not sick myself of the same disease, with what tears should I mix this ink? With what groans should I express these complaints, and with what heart grief should I mourn over this universal deadness? Do magistrates among us seriously perform their work? Are they zealous for God? Do they build up his house? Are they tender of his honor? Do they second the word and oppose sin and sinners as the disturbers of our peace and the only cause of all our miseries? Do they improve all their power, wealth, and honor, and all their influence for the greatest advantage to the kingdom of Christ as men that must shortly give an account of their stewardship? How few are the ministers who are serious in their work. Nay, how grievously do the very best fail in this? Do we cry out of men's disobedience to the gospel in the demonstration of the Spirit and deal with sin as the destroying fire in our towns and by force pull men out of it? Do we persuade our people as those should that know the terrors of the Lord? Do we press Christ and regeneration and faith and holiness upon men, believing that without these they can never have life? Do our bowels yearn over the ignorant, careless, obstinate multitude when we look them in the face? Do our hearts melt over them, lest we should never see their faces in rest? Do we, as Paul, telling them, weeping, of their fleshly and earthly dispositions, and teach them publicly and from house to house at all seasons and with many tears? And do we entreat them as for their soul's salvation? Or rather, do we not study to gain the approbation of critical hearers, as if a minister's business were of no more weight but to tell a smooth tale for an hour, and look no more after the people till the next sermon? Does not carnal prudence control our fervor and make our discourses lifeless on subjects the most piercing? How gently do we handle those sins which will so cruelly handle our people's souls? In a word, our want of seriousness about the things of heaven charms the souls of men into formality and brings them to this customary careless hearing, which undoes them. May the Lord pardon the great sin of the ministry in this thing, and in particular, my own. And are the people more serious than magistrates or ministers? How can it be expected? Reader, look but to thyself and resolve the question. Ask conscience, and suffer it to tell thee truly. Hast thou set thy eternal rest before thine eyes as the great business thou hast to do in this world? Hast thou watched and labored with all thy might, that no man take thy crown? Hast thou made haste, lest thou shouldst come too late and die before thy work be done? Hast thou pressed on through crowds of opposition toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus, till reaching forth unto those things which are before? Can conscience witness your secret cries and groans and tears? Can your family witness that you taught them the fear of the Lord and warned them not to go to that place of torment? Can your minister witness that he has heard you cry out, "What shall I do to be saved?" and that you have followed him with complaints against your corruptions and with earnest inquiries after the Lord? Can your neighbors about you witness that you reprove the ungodly and take pains to save the souls of your brethren? Let all these witnesses judge this day between God and you whether you are in earnest about eternal rest. You can tell by his work whether your servant has loitered, though you did not see him, so you may by looking at your own work. Are your love to Christ, your faith, your zeal, and other graces strong or weak? What are your joys? What is your assurance? Is all in order with you? Are you ready to die if this should be the day? Do the souls among whom you have conversed bless you? Judge by this, and it will quickly appear whether you have been laborers or loiterers. O blessed rest! How unworthily art thou neglected! O glorious kingdom, how art thou undervalued! Little know the careless sons of men what a state they so neglect. If they once knew it, they would surely be of another mind. I hope thou, reader, art sensible what a desperate thing it is to trifle about eternal rest, and how deeply thou hast been guilty of this thyself. And I hope also thou wilt not suffer this conviction to die, should the physician tell thee, "If you will observe but one thing, I doubt not to cure your disease," wouldst thou not observe it? So I tell thee, if thou wilt observe but this one thing for thy soul, I make no doubt of thy salvation. Shake off thy sloth, and put to all thy strength, and be a Christian indeed. I know not then what can hinder thy happiness. As far as thou art gone from God, seek him with all thy heart, and no doubt thou shalt find him. As unkind as thou hast been to Jesus Christ, seek him heartily, obey him unreservedly, and thy salvation is as sure as if thou hadst it already. But, full as Christ's satisfaction is, free as the promise is, large as the mercy of God is, if thou only talk of these, when thou shouldst eagerly entertain them, thou wilt be never the better for them. And if thou loiter, when thou shouldst labor, thou wilt lose the crown. Fall to work then speedily and seriously, and bless God that thou hast yet time to do it. To show that I urge thee not without cause, I will here add a variety of animating considerations. Rouse up thy spirit, and as Moses said to Israel, set thy heart unto all the words which I testify unto thee this day, for it is not a vain thing, because it is your life. May the Lord open thy heart and fasten his counsel effectually upon thee. 1. Consider how reasonable it is that our diligence should be answerable to the ends we aim at, to the work we have to do, to the shortness and uncertainty of our time, and to the contrary diligence of our enemies. The ends of a Christian's desire and endeavors are so great that no human understanding can comprehend them. What is so excellent, so important, or so necessary as the glorifying of God, the salvation of our own and other men's souls, by escaping the torments of hell and possessing the glory of heaven? And can a man be too much affected with things of such moment? Can he desire them too earnestly, or love them too strongly, or labor for them too diligently? Do not we know that if our prayers prevail not, and our labor succeeds not, we are undone forever? The work of a Christian here is very great and various. The soul must be renewed, corruptions must be mortified, customs, temptations, and worldly interests must be conquered, flesh must be subdued, life, friends, and credit must be slighted, conscience on good grounds be quieted, and assurance of pardon and salvation attained. Though God must give us these without our merit, yet he will not give them without our earnest seeking and labor. Besides, there is much knowledge to be acquired, many ordinances to be used, and duties to be performed. Every age, year, and day, every place we come to, every person we deal with, every change of our condition, still require the renewing of our labor. Wives, children, servants, neighbors, friends, enemies, all of them call for duty from us. Judge then whether men that have so much business lying upon their hands should not exert themselves, and whether it be their wisdom either to delay or loiter. Time passeth on, yet a few days, and we shall be here no more. Many diseases are ready to assault us. We that are now preaching and hearing and talking and walking must very shortly be carried and laid in the dust, and there left to the worms in darkness and corruption. We are almost there already. We know not whether we shall have another sermon or Sabbath or hour. How active should they be who know they have so short a space for so great a work? And we have enemies that are always plotting and laboring for our destruction. How diligent is Satan in all kinds of temptations. Therefore, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour. Whom resist, steadfast in the faith. How diligent are all the ministers of Satan, false teachers, scoffers, persecutors, and our inbred corruptions, the most busy and diligent of all. Will a feeble resistance serve our turn? Should not we be more active for our own preservation than our enemies are for our ruin? 2. It should excite us to diligence. When we consider our talents and our mercies, our relation to God, and the afflictions He lays upon us. The talents which we have received are many and great. What people breathing on earth have had plainer instructions, or more forcible persuasions, or more constant admonitions, in season and out of season, sermons, till we have been weary of them, and Sabbaths, till we have profaned them, excellent books, in such plenty that we knew not which to read. What people have had God so near them, or have seen so much of Christ crucified before their eyes, or have had heaven and hell so open unto them? What speed should such a people make for heaven? How should they fly that are thus winged? And how swiftly should they sail that have wind and tide to help them? A small measure of grace becomes not such a people, nor will an ordinary diligence in the work of God excuse them. All our lives have been filled with mercies. God hath mercifully poured out upon us the riches of sea and land, of heaven and earth. We are fed and clothed with mercy. We have mercies within and without. To number them is to count the stars or the sands of the seashore. If there be any difference between hell and earth, yea, or heaven and earth, then certainly we have received mercy. If the blood of the Son of God be mercy, then we are engaged to God by mercy. Shall God think nothing too much, nor too good for us? And shall we think all too much that we do for Him? When I compare my slow and unprofitable life with the frequent and wonderful mercies received, it shames me, it silences me, and leaves me inexcusable. Besides our talents and mercies, our relations to God are most endearing. Are we His children, and do we not owe Him our most tender affections and dutiful obedience? Are we the spouse of Christ, and should we not obey and love Him? If He be a father, where is His honor? And if He be a master, where is His fear? We call Him Master and Lord, and we say, well. But if our industry be not answerable to our relations, we condemn ourselves in saying we are His children or His servants. How will the hard labor and daily toil which servants undergo to please their masters judge and condemn those who will not labor so hard for their great master? Surely there is no master like Him, nor can any servants expect such fruit of their labors as His servants. And if we wander out of God's way, or loiter in it, how is every creature ready to be His rod to bring us back or urge us on? Our sweetest mercies will become our sorrows. Rather than want a rod, the Lord will make us a scourge to ourselves. Our diseased bodies will make us groan. Our perplexed minds will make us restless. Our conscience shall be as a scorpion in our bosom. And is it not easier to endure the labor than the spur? Had we rather be still afflicted than be up and doing? And though they that do most meet also with afflictions, yet surely, according to their peace of conscience and faithfulness to Christ, the bitterness of their cup is abated. 3. To quicken our diligence in our work, we should also consider what assistance we have, what principles we profess, and our certainty that we can never do too much for our assistance in the service of God. All the world are our servants. The sun, moon, and stars attend us with their light and influence. The earth, with all its furniture of plants and flowers, fruits, birds, and beasts. The sea with its inhabitants, the air, the wind, the frost and the snow, the heat and fire, the clouds and rain, all wait upon us while we do our work. Yea, the angels are all our ministering spirits. Nay, more, the patience of God doth wait upon us. The Lord Jesus Christ waiteth in the offers of his blood. The Holy Spirit waiteth by striving with our backward hearts. Besides the ministers of the gospel who study and wait, preach and wait, pray and wait upon careless sinners. And is it not an intolerable crime for us to trifle while angels and men, yea, the Lord himself, stand by and look on and, as it were, hold us the candle while we do nothing? I beseech you, Christians, whenever you are praying or reproving transgressors or upon any duty, remember what assistance you have for your work, and then judge how you ought to perform it. The principles we profess are that God is the chief good, that all our happiness consists in his love, and therefore it should be valued and sought above all things. That he is our only Lord, and therefore chiefly to be served. That we must love him with all our heart and soul and strength. That our great business in the world is to glorify God and obtain salvation. Are these doctrines seen in our practice? Or rather, do not our works deny what our words confess? But however our assistance and principles excite us to our work, we are sure we can never do too much. Could we do all? We are unprofitable servants, much more when we are sure to fail in all. No man can obey or serve God too much, though all superstition or service of our own devising may be called a being righteous overmuch, yet as long as we keep to the rule of the world, we can never be righteous too much. The world are mad with malice when they think that faithful diligence in the service of Christ is foolish singularity. The time is near when they will easily confess that God could not be loved or served too much, and that no man can be too earnest to save his soul. We may easily do too much for the world, but we cannot for God. 4. Let us further consider that it is the nature of every grace to promote diligence, that trifling in the way to heaven is lost labor, that much precious time is already misspent, and that in proportion to our labor will be our recompense. See the nature and tendency of every grace. If you loved God, you would think nothing too much that you could possibly do to serve him and please him. Love is quick and impatient, active and observant. If you loved Christ, you would keep his commandments, nor accuse them of too much strictness. If you had faith, it would quicken and encourage you. If you had the hope of glory, it would, as the spring in the watch, set all the wheels of your souls a-going. If you had the fear of God, it would rouse you out of your slothfulness. If you had zeal, it would inflame and eat you up. In what degree soever thou art sanctified, in the same degree thou wilt be serious and laborious in the work of God. They that trifle lose their labor. Many who, like Agrippa, are but almost Christians, will find in the end they shall be but almost saved. If to be running in a race, he that runs slowest loses both prize and labor. A man that is lifting at a weight, if he put not sufficient strength to it, had as good put none at all. How many duties have Christians lost for want of doing them thoroughly? Many will seek to enter in and shall not the able, who, if they had striven, might have been able. Therefore, put to a little more diligence and strength, that all you have done already be not in vain. Besides, is not much precious time already lost? With some of us, childhood and youth are gone. With some, their middle age also. And the time before us is very uncertain. What time have we slept, talked, and played away, or spent in worldly thoughts and cares? How little of our work is done. The time we have lost cannot be recalled. Should we not then redeem and improve the little which remains? If a traveler sleep or trifle most of the day, he must travel so much faster in the evening, or fall short of his journey's end. Doubt not but the recompense will be according to your labor. The seed which is buried and dead will bring forth a plentiful harvest. Whatever you do or suffer, everlasting rest will pay for all. There is no relenting of labors or sufferings in heaven. There no one says, would I had spared my pains and prayed less, or been less strict and done as the rest of my neighbors. On the contrary, it will be their joy to look back upon their labors and tribulations, and to consider how the mighty power of God brought them through all. We may all say as Paul, I reckon that the sufferings and labors of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. We labor but for a moment. We shall rest forever. Who would not put forth all his strength for 1 hour, when for that hour's work he may be a prince while he lives? God is not unrighteous to forget our work and labor of love. Will not all our tears be wiped away, and all the sorrow of our duties be then forgotten? 5. Nor does it less deserve to be considered that striving is the divinely appointed way of salvation, that all men either do or will approve it, that the best Christians at death lament their negligence, and that heaven itself is often lost for want of striving, but is never had on easier terms. The sovereign wisdom of God has made striving necessary to salvation. Who knows the way to heaven better than the God of heaven? When men tell us we are too strict, whom do they accuse? God or us? If it were a fault, it would lie in him that commands, and not in us who obey. These are the men that ask us whether we are wiser than all the world beside, and yet they will pretend to be wiser than God. How can they reconcile their language with the laws of God? The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. Strive to enter in at the strait gate, for many will seek to enter in and shall not be able. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, no device, no knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Give diligence to make your calling and election sure. If the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? Let them bring all the seeming reasons they can against the holy violence of the saints. This sufficeth me to confute them all, that God is of another mind, and he hath commanded me to do much more than I do. And though I could see no other reason for it, his will is reason enough. Who should make laws for us but he that made us? And who should point out the way to heaven but he that must bring us thither? And who should fix the terms of salvation but he that bestows the gift of salvation? So that let the world, the flesh, or the devil speak against a holy, laborious life, this is my answer: God hath commanded it. Nay, there never was, nor ever will be, a man but will approve such a life, and will one day justify the diligence of the saints. And who would not go that way which every man shall finally applaud? True, it is now a way everywhere spoken against. But let me tell you, most that speak against it in their judgments approve of it, and those that are now against it will shortly be of another mind. If they come to heaven, their mind must be changed before they come there. If they go to hell, their judgment will then be altered, whether they will or not. Remember this, you that love the opinion and way of the multitude, why then will you not be of the opinion that all will be of? Why will you be of a judgment which you are sure all of you shortly to change? Oh, that you were but as wise in this as those in hell. Even the best of Christians, when they come to die, exceedingly lament their negligence. They then wish, oh, that I had been 1,000 times more holy, more heavenly, more laborious for my soul. The world accuses me for doing too much, but my own conscience accuses me for doing too little. It is far easier bearing the scoffs of the world than the lashes of conscience. I had rather be reproached by the devil for seeking salvation than reproved of God for neglecting it. How do their failings thus wound and disquiet those who have been the wonder of the world for their heavenly conversation? It is for want of diligence that heaven itself is lost. When they that have heard the word and anon with joy received it, and have done many things and heard the ministers of Christ gladly, shall yet perish. Should not this rouse us out of our security? How far hath many a man followed Christ, and yet forsaken him when all worldly interests and hopes were to be renounced? God hath resolved that heaven shall not be had on easier terms. Rest must always follow labor. Without holiness, no man shall see the Lord. Seriousness is the very thing wherein consists our sincerity. If thou art not serious, thou art not a Christian. It is not only a high degree in Christianity, but the very life and essence of it. As fencers upon a stage differ from soldiers fighting for their lives, so hypocrites differ from serious Christians. If men could be saved without this serious diligence, they would never regard it. All the excellencies of God's ways would never entice them. But when God hath resolved that without serious diligence here we shall not rest hereafter, is it not wisdom to exert ourselves to the uttermost? 6. But to persuade thee, if possible, reader, to be serious in thy endeavors for heaven, let me add more considerations. As, for instance, consider, God is in earnest with you, and why should you not be so with him? In his commands, his threatenings, his promises, he means as he speaks. In his judgments, he is serious. Was he not so when he drowned the world, when he consumed Sodom and Gomorrah, and when he scattered the Jews? Is it time then to trifle with God? Jesus Christ was serious in purchasing our redemption. In teaching, he neglected his meat and drink. In prayer, he continued all night. In doing good, his friends thought him beside himself. In suffering, he fasted 40 days, was tempted, betrayed, spit upon, buffeted, crowned with thorns, sweat drops of blood, was crucified, pierced, died. There was no jesting in all this. And should we not be serious in seeking our own salvation? The Holy Spirit is serious in soliciting us to be happy. His motions are frequent, pressing, and importunate. He striveth with us. He is grieved when we resist him. And should we not be serious then in obeying and yielding to his motions? God is serious in hearing our prayers and bestowing our mercies. He is afflicted with us. He regardeth every groan and sigh, and puts every tear into his bottle. The next time thou art in trouble, thou wilt beg for a serious regard of thy prayers. And shall we expect real mercies when we are slight and superficial in the work of God? The ministers of Christ are serious in exhorting and instructing you. They beg of God and of you, and long more for the salvation of your souls than for any worldly good. If they kill themselves by their labor or suffer martyrdom for preaching the gospel, they think their lives are well bestowed, so that they prevail for the saving of your souls. And shall other men be so careful and self-denying for your salvation, and you be so careless and negligent of your own? How diligent and serious are all the creatures in serving you. What haste makes the sun to compass the world. The fountains are always flowing for thy use. The rivers still running. Spring and harvest keep their times. How hard does thy ox labor for thee from day to day. How speedily does thy horse travel with thee. And shalt thou only be negligent? Shall all these be so serious in serving thee, and thou so careless in thy service to God? The servants of the world and the devil are serious and diligent. They work as if they could never do enough. They make haste, as if afraid of coming to hell too late. They bear down ministers, sermons, and all before them. And shall they be more diligent for damnation than thou for salvation? Hast thou not a better master, sweeter employment, greater encouragements, and a better reward? Time was when thou wast serious thyself in serving Satan and the flesh, if it be not so yet. How eagerly didst thou follow thy sports, thy evil company and sinful delights, and wilt thou not now be as earnest and violent for God? You are to this day in earnest about the things of this life. If you are sick or in pain, what serious complaints do you utter? If you are poor, how hard do you labor for a livelihood? And is not the business of your salvation a far greater moment? There is no jesting in heaven or hell. The saints have a real happiness, and the damned a real misery. There are no remiss or sleepy praises in heaven, nor such lamentations in hell. All there are in earnest. When thou, reader, shalt come to death and judgment, oh, what deep, heart-piercing thoughts wilt thou have of eternity! Methinks I foresee thee already astonished to think how thou couldst possibly make so light of these things. Methinks I even hear thee crying out of thy stupidity and madness. And now, reader, having laid down these undeniable arguments, I do, in the name of God, demand thy resolution. Wilt thou yield obedience or not? I am confident thy conscience is convinced of thy duty. Darest thou now go on in thy common, careless course against the plain evidence of reason and commands of God and against the light of thy own conscience? Darest thou live as loosely, sin as boldly, and pray as seldom as before? Darest thou profane the Sabbath, slight the service of God, and think of thine everlasting state as carelessly as before? Or dost thou not rather resolve to gird up the loins of thy mind and set thyself wholly to the work of thy salvation and break through the oppositions and slight the scoffs and persecutions of the world and lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset thee and run with patience the race that is before thee? I hope these are thy full resolutions. Yet, because I know the obstinacy of the heart of man, and because I am solicitous that thy soul should live, I once more entreat thy attention to the following questions, and I command thee from God that thou stifle not thy conscience, nor resist conviction, but answer them faithfully and obey accordingly.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."